Today is the disappearance day anniversary of Srila Sanatan Goswami, the eldest of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So instead of speaking from the regular Srimad Bhagavatam verse, we'll try to speak the glories of Sanatan Goswami, and we'll recite this verse from the Adi Leela chapter 5 of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Sanatana kripai paino bhaktira siddhanta. Shri rupa kripai paino bhaktira sapranta.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. By the mercy of Sanatana Goswami, I have learned the final conclusions of devotional service. And by the grace of Sri Rupa Goswami, I have tasted the highest nectar of devotional service. Purport. Sri Sanatan Goswami Prabhu, the teacher of the science of devotional service, wrote several books, of which the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is very famous. Anyone who wants to know about the subject matter of devotees, devotional service, and Krishna must read this book. Sanatan Goswami also wrote a special commentary on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam known as Dashama Tippani, which is so excellent that by reading it one can understand very deeply the pastimes of Krishna in his exchanges of loving activities. Another famous book by Sanatan Goswami is the Hari Bhakti Vilas, which states the rules and regulations for all divisions of Vaishnavas, namely Vaishnava householders, Vaishnava brahmacharis, Vaishnava vanaprasthas, and Vaishnava sannyasis. This book was especially written, however, for the Vaishnava householders. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami has described Sanatan Goswami in his prayer Vilapa Kusumanjali, verse 6, where he has expressed his obligation to Sanatan Goswami in the following words: Vairagya Yug Bhakti Rasam Prayatnair Apayayan Mam Abhipsum Andham Kripam Bhutir Yah Paradukha Dukhi Sanatanas Tam Parbhum Ashrayami. I was unwilling to drink the nectar of devotional service, possessed of renunciation. But Sanatan Goswami, out of his causeless mercy, has made me drink it, even though I was otherwise unable to do so. Therefore, he is an ocean of mercy. He is very much compassionate to fallen souls like me. And thus, it is my duty to offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also, in the last section of Chaitanya Charitamrita, specifically mentions the names of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Srila Jiva Goswami, and offers his respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of these three spiritual masters, as well as Raghunath Das. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami also accepted Sanatan Goswami as the teacher of the science of devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami is described as the Bhakti Rasacharya, or one who knows the essence of devotional service. His famous book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a science of devotional service, and by reading this book one can understand the meaning of devotional service. Another of his famous books is Ujjvala Neelamani. In this book he elaborately explains the loving affairs and transcendental activities of Lord Krishna and Radharani.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Meelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam
వందేహం శ్రీగురు శ్రీయుతపదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతం సహగణరఘునాథాన్వితం తం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనసహితం కృష్ణచైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధాకృష్ణపాదాం సహగణలలిత శ్రీవిశాఖాన్వితాంశ్చ నమ ఓం విష్ణుపాదాయ కృష్ణప్రేష్ఠాయ భూతలే శ్రీమతే భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామినితి నామినే నమస్తే సారస్వతే దేవే గౌరవాణీ ప్రచారిణే నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశ తారిణే జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్త వృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే 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 కృష్ణ. టుడే ఇస్ ది డే దట్ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ గురు పూర్ణిమ, అండ్ ఇన్ ద వేదిక్ కల్చర్ దిస్ ఇస్ కన్సిడర్డ్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ బికాస్ ఇట్ ఈస్ అ డే కనెక్టెడ్ విత్ శ్రీల వ్యాసదేవ్. ఇట్ ఈస్ కన్సిడర్డ్ ది అపియరెన్స్ డే ఆఫ్ వ్యాసదేవ్, హూ ఈస్ ది ఒరిజినల్ గురు, because he is the compiler of the Vedas. However, for Gaudiya Vaishnavas and in Vrindavan especially, this tithi or this day of Guru Purnima is considered even more memorable because it is the disappearance day anniversary of Srila Sanatan Goswami. In fact, in Braj, all the Brajabasis, and we're not talking only of ISKCON devotees, we're talking of Brajabasis in general, thousands and thousands of Brajabasis, they have great regard for Srila Sanatana Goswami. And on this day, we will find, on the day of disappearance of Srila Sanatana Goswami, we will find very, very large crowds of people doing parikrama of Giri Govardhan. And they do so out of respect for and in memory of, in glorification of Srila Sanatan Goswami, because he was so dear to the Brajabasis. Along with the six other Goswamis, the five other Goswamis and others as well, he was very popular with the local Brajabasis. Because of his saintly qualities, he won over the hearts of all the Brajabasis. Dhira dhira jana priyo priya karo. So he was dear not just to the saintly, the dhiras, but also the adhiras, those who were rogues and ruffians. And there must have been quite a few of them in those days as well, not just today. So that's why it's mentioned that they were popular with both the rogues and the great saintly persons. So Sanatan Goswami was the eldest amongst the six Goswamis. The eldest, mean he was about 5 years older than Rupa Goswami. He was 2 years younger than Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu appeared in 1486, and Sanatan Goswami appeared 2 years later. And Rupa Goswami appeared 5 years after Sanatan Goswami. So Rupa Goswami therefore was not only the younger brother of Sanatan, but he also considered Sanatan Goswami as his guru, and therefore he deferred to him whenever it came to some issues. And there were occasions where Sanatan Goswami would almost pull him up and say, "Rupa, you know, you shouldn't have done this, or you should be doing this." So even though we are called Rupanugas, the followers of Rupa Goswami, in particular out of the six Goswamis, but Sanatan Goswami also has a very, very important role to play for all of us. As Srila Prabhupada says here in the purport, that Srila Sanatan Goswami is considered or is described as the Siddhantacharya, Because he gives us the essential conclusions of devotional service. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has mentioned here, Sanatana Kripaya Painu Bhaktira Siddhanta. After Kaviraj Goswami came to Vrindavan from Bengal, having been instructed by none other than Nityananda Prabhu in his dream to do so, he speaks these verses and he mentions that it is by the mercy of Srila Sanatana Goswami that I got the final conclusions of devotional service, Siddhanta. We all hear this word very often. Siddha means perfection, perfect. Anta means conclusion. So the conclusions, the perfect conclusions or the ultimate end of the conclusions of something. So the Siddhanta of Bhakti was given by Srila Sanatana Goswami. And the conclusions of rasa, or the knowledge of bhakti rasa, the transcendental mellows of devotional service, was specifically taught by Srila Rupa Goswami. So Srila Kaviraj Goswami expresses his gratitude to these two transcendental brothers, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. He is also described by our acharyas, Srila Sanatana Goswami, that is, to be the Siddhanta Acharya, which means he is the Sambandha Acharya. As we all know, Mahaprabhu has taught that the Vedic knowledge can be understood in three phases, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So Sambandha establishes the relationship of the living entity to Krishna. It gives us an understanding of who Krishna is, who we are, what our relationship with Krishna is. And simultaneously we also hear about the material world and what the relationship of the material world is to Krishna and to the living entity. So this roughly, approximately, constitutes a Sambandha Gyan. So Srila Sanatana Goswami is considered the deity or the worshipable guru of Sambandha Gyan. And the deity for Sambandha Gyan is Madan Mohan, who was the worshipable deity of Sanatana Goswami. So he has written many books. Srila Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, Sanatana Goswami, the teacher of the science of devotional service, wrote several books, amongst them the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Dashama Tippani, the commentary on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and also the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, specifically Sanatana, were given four instructions by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu regarding what they should do when they go to Vrindavan. One was to excavate and identify the lost pastime places of Krishna. Number two, to study the Vedic scriptures and to extract the devotional conclusions and write books on them. Third, to establish temples of the Lord and the worship of the deity. And fourth, to write a manual about how a Vaishnava should live, what a Vaishnava should do, should not do, what should be the lifestyle of a Vaishnava, how should a Vaishnava worship and perform activities of devotional service. So Sanatana Goswami and the other Goswamis along with him did an admirable job, a wonderful job to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the text, Sri Gauda Ganodesh Deepika of Kavi Karnapur, Srila Sanatana Goswami has been identified as a Manjari called Rati Manjari, who is very, very dear to Sri Rupa Manjari. Rupa Manjari in Krishna Leela has come as Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Manjari's very dear associate, Rati Manjari, has come as Sanatana Goswami. Gaudiya Vaishnavas
also consider Rati Manjari, another name for Rati Manjari, to be Lavanga Manjari. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also mentions that one of the four Kumaras, Sanatan Kumar, also entered into the body of Sanatan Goswami to fulfill a certain purpose. So Sanatan Goswami, as the other Goswamis there, they're eternal associates of Krishna. They're not ordinary living entities. But somehow or the other, they, for fulfilling the Lord's desires, they appear in the material world. They appear to be sadhakas, as practicing devotees. They appear to go through the motions of, finding devotional service, meeting the Lord, and then renouncing the world, of being in worldly professions for some time, and then renouncing it and going to take shelter of the Lord, etc. But in the midst of all these activities, we should know that they are actually eternal associates. They were born and lived in Bengal. Originally, they were from Brahmin families, the Saraswat Brahmin families, and their ancestors had left South India, the state of Karnataka, and migrated to Bengal. It is said in the book called Gaudiya Vaishnava Abhidhana that the grandfather of Sanatan Goswami, whose name was Mukunda, had somehow entered the court of a king, a Muslim king in that area, whose name was Barbak Khan. And he continued somehow in his service to the court even after Barbak Khan's death, and when his son Yusuf took over. After Yusuf, there was the successor was called Fateh Khan, Fateh Shah. And Mukunda continued his service there, but sometime during the period of Fateh Shah, Fateh Shah was killed by his slaves. There were some slaves from Abyssinia. And it was a custom of some kings in those days that they would have some slaves and also some eunuchs who would be in the harem. So these Abyssinians, they killed Fateh Shah, and one of them became the king. And it was during the time of Fateh Shah that Mukunda, the grandfather of Sanatan, passed away, and Sanatan somehow took employment in the court. And even though the king, Fateh Shah, was killed by the Abyssinians continued to engage or employ Sanatan Goswami. So he remained there. And then, as it happened, the Abyssinians, they ruled for 5 or 6 years. And then their prime minister, he must have overthrown them or something. That's what happens in these kingdoms. They overthrew them, and he became the king, Nawab Hussein Shah. Hussein Shah was the prime minister of the Abyssinians. And by this time, because Sanatan Goswami had been around for quite a while, he became the prime minister to the Nawab Hussein Shah. And then later, Rupa Goswami became like the finance minister or something. So both of them became very, very useful, almost indispensable for Nawab Hussein Shah. Nawab Hussein Shah relied on two of them, Rup and Sanatan Goswamis, very, very extensively. Sanatan and Rupa, because they were so intimately associating with the Nawab Hussein Shah, and previously to him other Muslim kings, they had got these Muslim titles. Sanatan was called Sakar Malik, and Rupa Goswami was called Dabir Khas. Now, Sanatan's father was a very conservative and orthodox Brahmin, and he would atone, he would perform acts of religious atonement even if he saw a Muslim. Whereas, because they were, Yavanas, they were not so cultured, they were killers of animals and so on and so forth. But Sanatan somehow or the other, and Rupa also, they had taken employment, and they were very closely associating with the Muslims, and their source of livelihood was connected with the Muslims. So Sanatan Goswami considered himself a very fallen person. Even though he was born in an aristocratic Brahmana family and was actually very cultured and knowledgeable, but because of his constant and close association with the Muslim king, and because he was taking money from the Muslim king for his livelihood, he considered that he was extremely fallen. Although even at that stage, we should know that he was even externally an exalted devotee. But somehow he considered himself like that. That's the nature of a Vaishnava. It is also mentioned that from the very childhood, Rup and Sanatan Goswamis exhibited symptoms of very, very advanced devotion. And they would render devotional service to the Lord. And in the place where they lived, Ramakeli, as time went on, they created a replica of Vrindavan. And that's called Gupta Vrindavan. Gupta means secret. And they had everything that is there in Vrindavan. They had Radha Kund, Shama Kund, they had a little Giri Govardhan, and they had created the different forests of Vrindavan there, especially the 12 major forests. So they lived in that environment, and they would study Srimad Bhagavatam, and they were very much involved in devotional service, even whilst in employment of the Muslim kings. Now, it so happened that time went on, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, and then he had gone on to Jagannath Puri, and then from there he took a tour, a pilgrimage tour of South India, the holy places there. He returned to Jagannath Puri, and a short time thereafter, he decided to go to Vrindavan. So he took the route along the Ganga River. And as he went into Bengal, he came to Ramakeli. As he entered the kingdom of Nawab Hussain Shah, thousands and thousands of people were following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There were huge crowds. The Nawab Hussain Shah heard about this and he became insecure and felt threatened. Because political leaders, they very often feel threatened about their position. When they see someone else becoming very powerful or very popular, they start getting nervous and they think, what's going to happen to my position? So Nawab Hussain Shah was getting a little nervous about this whole thing. But there was a devotee, a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was also in the court of the Nawab Hussain Shah. So he somehow or the other pacified him and said, no, don't worry, he's a harmless, mendicant. And anyway, he's going to move on now, nothing to worry about. So that somehow consoled the king. And the king went ahead into his inner quarters, but the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially this Keshav Kshatriya, who understood this, he figured that this king is not reliable. He's saying it's okay right now, but who knows what he'll do tomorrow. He may even cause some harm to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he told Rupa and Sanatan Goswami that I think you better do something about it. Make sure that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu leaves from here very quickly. So Sanatan Goswami went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli, even when he was still a minister of the king. And he told Mahaprabhu, it is not the proper etiquette for a sannyasi to go to Vrindavan followed by thousands and thousands of people like this. It's better you go back to Bengal. So he actually instructed and advised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, this was in accordance to the Lord's plan, because the Lord eventually had something to accomplish. So anyway, Mahaprabhu heard that and he went on. He moved on, but towards Vrindavan. He didn't immediately turn back towards Puri. He continued on and reached a place called Kanai Natshala. Any one of you has been to Kanai Natshala? Ramakeli? Kanai Natshala, you've been there? Ramakeli. And that is at Kanai Natshala, really. And little further on is Kanai Natshala. It's a beautiful place. It's a place where in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is described that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Krishna. So it's on a hill and just overseeing the Ganga, a very, very beautiful sight. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went up to that point and then reflected on Sanatana Goswami's advice. And then he decided, actually Sanatana's right. I shouldn't go ahead like this to Vrindavan with thousands of followers. I should just turn back and go to Puri. So he turned around and went back to Puri, heeding the advice of Sanatana Goswami. Now, when Mahaprabhu was in Ramakeli, he had such a profound influence on Sanatana and Rupa Goswamis that from that moment on, there was no looking back. They decided, they resolved that they would take to a life of renunciation, that at the earliest available opportunity, they would leave their worldly occupation with the king and they would renounce the world and go to Vrindavan and serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was during his Mahaprabhu's visit to Ramakeli that he gave them the names Rupa and Sanatan. The Bir Khas he called him Rupa, Sri Rupa. They became Goswami later, officially the title. But he called him Sri Rupa. And to Sanatan to Sakar Malik he said, "You are Sri Sanatan." So he renamed them, gave them auspicious names. And then Mahaprabhu returned. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis could never take their mind off Mahaprabhu after that. Earlier also, when Sanatan was much younger, he had dreamt of a Brahmana boy coming in his dream and giving him a book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and telling him, "This is a very holy book. You please study this book." And the next morning, when he woke up, he, and then in the dream, actually, he lost sight of the book as well as that Brahmana. The next morning, however, soon after he woke up, a Brahmana came to his house and actually gifted him the Srimad Bhagavatam and requested him to study it. And Sanatana Goswami began a very intensive study of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's departure, when Rupa Goswami left to go to Vrindavan and Sanatana was alone, he continued studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. He stopped going to work. He made his application for sick leave. Sometimes our devotees do the same when they have to go for some temple services or some other thing. They put in a sick leave application and then they skip work. So Sanatana Goswami also, well, I think what devotees do somewhat in parampara. Not that I'm encouraging devotees to falsely claim things in the place of work. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman ki jai, Shri Gaur Nithai ki jai. So he put in a sick leave application and he stayed back. But he was only studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. He had engaged some Brahmanas to come and recite and he would discuss Srimad Bhagavatam all day long with them. The Nawab, the king, got suspicious. He says, "Quite a few days have elapsed and Sanatana Goswami hasn't come. Is he really sick?" So he sent somebody to check him out. And then he found that Sanatana Goswami was hale and hearty, but he was engaged in the deep discussions on the Srimad Bhagavatam with an assembly of Brahmanas. So the Nawab was enraged and he called Sanatana and threatened him. He pleaded with him emotionally first, and when that didn't work, then he threatened him. And finally, he even imprisoned him. So Sanatana Goswami tried to bribe his way out, because ultimately the jailer was the one he had appointed, because he had been the prime minister of the king. So But nevertheless, now the jailer was under the instructions from the Nawab to ensure that Sanatan would remain incarcerated. So Sanatan Goswami tried many tricks. He said, you know, I was the one who employed you, and, you know, and I've been unjustly imprisoned. It's not proper. Please release me. And the jailer wasn't convinced. And Sanatan said, you know, I'll give you a little bit of money. He wasn't convinced. He said, I'll give you 5,000 coins. He wasn't convinced. Finally, 7,000 gold coins. That clinched the deal. And in any case, he was still hesitating, but still said, you know, I'll also become a Sufi Muslim, and I'll go to Hajj for pilgrimage to Mecca. You know, I'll do all these holy activities. Please let me go. So now he was kind of melting and said, okay, all right, 7,000 gold coins and all of that. And then he said, you know, you can tell the king, but he was still afraid, what will the Nawab Hussain Shah do? He said, well, you can tell him that, you know, I went to answer the call of nature. You took me there. And afterwards, when I went to take bath in the Ganga, I just jumped into the Ganga and disappeared. And then he bought into that story, the jailer. All right, I'll do that. And Sanatan Goswami escaped. And he went towards Vrindavan. And of course, time doesn't permit us to tell so many other pastimes that happened along the way. He finally reached Varanasi, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already reached. And by this time, you know, he had a long beard. His hair was long because he had walked and walked. He had been in prison for a long time, and then he had walked and walked. So he didn't have an opportunity to shave. So he was unrecognizable. So when he reached Varanasi, he heard that Mahaprabhu was living at the home of one of his associates called Chandrasekhar Acharya. So he went and stood outside. Mahaprabhu understood that Sanatan was outside. And he told Chandrasekhar, just go and fetch Sanatan. A great saint has come. A great devotee has come. When Chandrasekhar went out, he just saw this unkempt looking person, you know, long hair, dirty clothes, you know, beard and all, sitting there. So he said, no, there's no saintly person outside. There's only some fakir, you know, some mendicant who's there. Yeah, yeah, call him, call him. That's Sanatan. So Chandrasekhar was surprised. And when Sanatan saw him, what is that noise? Sorry? Oh, I see. Okay. The Haveli construction, or just here something? Haveli construction. Okay. So, the Mahaprabhu embraced Sanatan, but he looked at the blanket that Sanatan Goswami had wrapped around himself, which is a blanket he received from his brother-in-law en route. He had halted at one place and his brother-in-law had given him this. So that one glance at that blanket indicated Mahaprabhu's displeasure, because it was a very fine-looking, high-quality blanket. And Sanatan Goswami had come to lead a life of a renunciant. And that blanket wasn't appropriate, you know, because a renunciant is not supposed to wear, you know, all sorts of fine, opulent clothing and things like that. So Sanatan Goswami got the message. Just one glance. Mahaprabhu didn't need to speak to him. You know, there is a proverb in Sanskrit also which says that just an indication is enough for an intelligent person. You know, an intelligent person doesn't need to be specifically told, do this, or this is not right, or, you know. So just an indication is sufficient that actually this should not be done. But nowadays, you know, things are getting gross and gross, and people have to be told not once, but so many times, and still people don't get it. So we have to hear again and again and again. That's our Kali Yuga, you know, situation. So Sanatan went to the banks of the Ganga in Varanasi, and there was a poor mendicant there who had a torn quilt. And Sanatan says, oh, you have such a wonderful quilt. Why don't we exchange these quilts? So the mendicant thought Sanatana was pulling his leg. He says, you know, you must be joking. You know, he said, no, I'm not joking. Give me that torn quilt. So the mendicant was happy to do that. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu later saw this torn quilt around Sanatana and he was very happy. And he said, yes, that is really nice. And he expressed his pleasure also just by his glance. So Mahaprabhu's pleasure and his displeasure was understood simply by Mahaprabhu's glance. And it was in Varanasi that Mahaprabhu taught Sanatana Goswami the science of devotional service for 2 months. Long time. To Rupa Goswami in Prayag, Allahabad, he taught for 10 days. But for Sanatana for two months. Therefore, the teachings to Rupa Goswami, known as Rupa Shiksha, are shorter. They're only for a part of the 19th chapter of the Madhya Leela in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the teachings to Sanatana Goswami span a couple of chapters, several chapters. So it was much longer. And they contain teachings in great depth about Krishna, about Vrindavan, about the spiritual world, about devotional service, about the glories of devotees, and many, many other topics. In his Dushta Mana prayers, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur admonishes his own mind. He's actually teaching us how we should admonish our mind. And he says, oh, wicked mind, instead of thinking of this and that, you just focus your mind on the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami, famously called the Sanatana Shiksha. Then after that, Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana to go to Vrindavan. And he did that. He met Subuddhi Rai. Subuddhi Rao escorted him around all the different forests of Vrindavan and Radha Kund, Shama Kund, etc. When Sanatana arrived in Vrindavan, he heard that Rupa Goswami, along with their younger brother Anupam Malik, had just left Vrindavan after completing his tour and he had gone back to Bengal. So after Sanatana Goswami finished his tour, he went to Jagannath Puri to associate with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And along the way, he contracted some kind of a disease, skin disease, maybe because he drank some water which was contaminated. And his body was full of these sores that were oozing pus. And it was very painful and uncomfortable. When he reached Jagannath Puri and he met Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu embraced him. And he turned away. Sanatana Goswami was feeling extremely embarrassed and awkward because, you know, he had pus on his body and here was Mahaprabhu was embracing him and the pus from his body was coming onto Mahaprabhu's body. And Sanatana was feeling terrible. He said, my Lord, please, please stay away from me, stay away from me. But Mahaprabhu considered Sanatana's body to be like nectar. In fact, Sanatana had contemplated committing suicide because he said this body has become so useless, it can't be used in the service of the Lord in this condition. So what's the point? Might as well commit suicide. Mahaprabhu understood the heart of Sanatana, and even before Sanatana could even say anything about his intentions, Mahaprabhu reprimanded him and said, Sanatana, you know, you've already surrendered to me. You've given up this body to me, your mind. How dare you think of giving it up? It's not your property. What kind of a gentleman would try to take back something that he's already given to somebody else? You've given your body to me. It's not yours anymore. So what right do you have to think of destroying this body? And Sanatana, if one could obtain Krishna by committing suicide, I would have committed suicide millions of times. But one can't obtain Krishna by committing suicide. One obtains Krishna by performing devotional service. So Sanatana understood, Mahaprabhu has not approved of my idea to commit suicide. It was an understatement. And then Sanatana stayed on. in Puri for one whole year he stayed actually. And he got a lot of intimate association there. Sanatan was so humble, that Kaviraj Goswami says that Mahaprabhu taught humility through Sanatan and Rupa Goswamis. He taught forbearance, tolerance through Haridas Thakur. He taught detachment through Swarup Damodar Goswami. He taught the glories of the holy name through Haridas Thakur. He taught how to conquer lust from through Ramananda Rai. And in this verse, as we hear, he taught the final conclusions of devotional service through Sanatan and about Rasa Tattva through Rupa Goswami. So the humility of Sanatan was found to be heartbreaking by Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu couldn't bear to see that humility. And therefore he wouldn't even go near the Jagannath temple out of fear that he would touch one of the pujaris who was going in for the service to the deity. And he would be content with meeting Mahaprabhu because he understood Mahaprabhu is non-different from Jagannath who is inside the temple. And like Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami who came there at other times, Haridas was there. He would look at the chakra, the Sudarshan chakra on top of the temple of Lord Jagannath. One time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at the residence of Gadadhar Pandit, who stayed at a place called Yameshwar Tota. And he asked for Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan came there, but he didn't go by the short route. He came by the long route, at which he had to walk along the hot sandy beach. And it was noontime, nearing noon, and the sand was blazing hot. So Sanatan Goswami walked bare feet on that sand. So his feet must have got so many blisters. But he was unconcerned with that because he was so eagerly looking forward to the prospect of meeting Mahaprabhu. He didn't care about these blisters in the soles of his feet. When he reached, Mahaprabhu said, "Sanatan, look at the condition of your feet. Which road did you take to come here?" And Sanatan told him, Mahaprabhu said, "Why didn't you take the route by the Jagannath temple, the Swargadwar of the Jagannath temple?" He said, no, if I passed there, even by mistake, if I somehow touched any of the devotees or the pandas or the priests, it would be such a great offense for me." And Mahaprabhu said, "Your humility, Sanatan, is heartbreaking. I cannot bear to see this kind of humility." So eventually, Mahaprabhu ordered him to go to Vrindavan. So Sanatan Goswami went there. He was the first one to arrive, to stay. Sanatan and Rupa both had visited Vrindavan previously, but this time they came for good. So Sanatan was the first to reach there and settle down in Vrindavan. Shortly thereafter, Rupa Goswami came, and then Raghunath Bhatta Goswami joined them after that. So these three were the first three of the six Goswamis to come in. Then the others came one after the other. So they stayed on for a long time in Vrindavan. Thereafter, they continued their devotional activities. In Vrindavan, there are many pastimes of Srila Sanatan Goswami. I'll just narrate two or three short pastimes because we're running out of time. Sanatan Goswami used to stay near Govardhan, near Manasi Ganga, at a place called Chakratirtha. This is where a form of Lord Shiva called Chakleshwar Mahadev stayed. The place is so called Chakreshwar because it is said that after, when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, his Sudarshan Chakra was moving fast, very fast, around the perimeter of Govardhan, as the Brajabasis were standing underneath Govardhan with Krishna. And the Sudarshan Chakra was evaporating all of the water that was streaming in because it was pouring. So he was keeping everything nice and warm so that the cold winds of the hurricane caused by Indra would not affect the Brajabasis under Govardhan Hill. So after Krishna completed his pastime of the lifting of Govardhan Hill and he replaced Govardhan back on the ground once the Brajabasis had gone out, then the Sudarshan Chakra of Govardhan came and began to reside at this place near on the bank of the Manasi Ganga. So that is why this place became known as Chakreshwar Tirtha. And Lord Shiva was also residing there, and he's Chakleshwar Mahadev. So Sanatan Goswami used to live there. Now it so happened that there were a lot of mosquitoes there. Those of you who have been to India and especially Vrindavan, you know, the mosquitoes are quite famous. And in Govardhan, the trouble with mosquitoes are so intense. Sanatan Goswami found it very difficult to sit and write his books. He found it difficult to sit and do his bhajan, his chanting, because the mosquito was just biting him like anything. So he decided to leave that spot and go to another place. And Lord Shiva didn't want to lose his association, because Lord Shiva was there in the form of his deity. So he appeared to him in the form of a dream, in the dream as a form of a brahmana, and said, "Please don't go, Sanatan. From tomorrow you will not be troubled by the mosquitoes." And indeed, the next day onwards, somehow or the other, the mosquitoes didn't come at that place. Somehow, Lord Shiva must have used his, must have pulled rank or used his influence with the demigods in charge of mosquitoes, and said, "You better control these mosquitoes. Don't, you know, this is the great devotee Sanatan. Don't trouble him." So in any case, the mosquitoes stopped. And till today, the Brajabasis say that at that spot, you won't be troubled by mosquitoes. I don't know, maybe if we go, we may get bitten, but at least Sanatan Goswami had complete freedom from mosquitoes from that day on. So he would sometimes also, he would do parikrama every day of Govardhan. And this went on till his old age. And when he became very old and he was still doing the parikrama, at one point he was so tired, he was just resting at one place. And this beautiful looking cow, this cowherd boy of Govardhan came to him and he started fanning him to relieve him of his fatigue. And then this boy went on top of Govardhan and he came back with a shila, a stone, Govardhan Shila, and said, "See, this is the lotus foot imprint of Krishna. So this is not different from Govardhan. You're getting so old. So you please just circumambulate this stone and it'll be as good as circumambulating the entire Govardhan Hill." So from that day on, Sanatan Goswami, who couldn't just walk all the way around Govardhan, used to do parikrama of this Shila. That shila is said to be in the Radha Damodar temple. And one time, when Sanatan would also go to Pavan Sarovar, which is near Nandagram. And he had and Krishna, it is said, appeared there in the form of a cowherd boy and gave him some milk to drink. And he also instructed him to build a little hut for himself to perform bhajan, the bhajan kutir. So Sanatan did that, and he used to chant the holy names, write his books, and meditate on Krishna's pastimes at the Pavan Sarovar. So those of you who have gone to Pavan Sarovar in Braj will have seen his place, Sanatan Goswami's place. Rupa Goswami also used to be there. One time, Rupa Goswami invited Sanatan Goswami for prasadam. And when Sanatana Goswami went there, he had a grand feast of sweet rice. And it was delicious, nectarian. And Sanatana asked Rupa, "Where did you get all the ingredients? We are mendicants here. We go and beg madhukari. We just take sometimes some chickpea flour with some Yamuna water. Sometimes if you're lucky, we get some roti, some chapati from the Brajabasis. But you're giving all this. Where did you get all this sugar and all the milk and this rice, fine quality rice? He said, this little girl, she just came up to me and gave me all the ingredients. And when he asked for the description, Sanatan understood that this was Radharani. And he admonished Rupa. He said, Rupa, what are you doing? You know, we are here. We are servants of Srimati Radharani and her servants. How can you accept service from her? That's not good. We have not come to Vraja to accept Radharani's service. So Rupa Goswami saying, he was feeling very embarrassed about it and apologetic. And Sanatana said, henceforward, you know, don't accept offerings that these little girls will come and give you. Because they were obviously gopis and so on. So anyway, he stayed on like this and he performed many, many pastimes. The other Goswamis were also there. They would meet together. Sanatana, being the eldest, obviously had great influence on the other Goswamis. And it was on this day that Sri Sanatana Goswami departed from this world and rejoined the pastimes of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Today also is the day when we officially start the Chaturmasya. There are some Vaishnavas and others, and non-Vaishnavas as well, for whom Chaturmasya began some days ago in Ekadashi, which was called Shayana Ekadashi. That is the Ekadashi on which it is said that Lord Vishnu on the milk ocean goes to sleep. His sleep is, of course, not like our sleep. It's Yoga Nidra. He is fully conscious and aware even though he's sleeping. So Lord Vishnu goes to sleep on the milk ocean for 4 months. And these 4 months are the Chaturmasya. Chatur means four, Masya means month. And he wakes up in the Ekadashi in Kartik, called the Prabodhini Ekadashi or the Uttana Ekadashi. That's when he wakes up. So the 4 month period of Chaturmasya. So for some people it begins on Ekadashi, but as Gaudiya Vaishnavas we followed from this Purnima. So Purnima, also our calendar ends on Purnima, Purnimanta calendar. So for us, Chaturmasya begins today. So those of you who would like to follow Chaturmasya, and I'd encourage you to do that. We know we have these forbidden items in each month. And in this month, the forbidden item is green leafy vegetables. So we avoid them in this month. And each of the other subsequent 3 months, we have other items that have to be avoided. So that month starts today. So Srila Sanatan Goswami Pad ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
That when there is an eclipse, one should chant the holy names as much as possible to destroy the inauspiciousness brought in by the eclipse. So today is the day when you can chant and chant and chant as much as you can, especially the time. I think the eclipse begins sometime around 8:30 or something at night, if I'm not mistaken, and goes on till a little after midnight. So generally we are also not supposed to eat in that time. And there is some difference of opinion about what we should and what we shouldn't do on the day of a lunar eclipse, at the time of the lunar eclipse. But one thing is definitely certain, we should chant, especially in this period. We needn't stop our preaching activities, that should go on. But in terms of eating, etc., cooking is generally recommended, we don't do that. Strictly speaking, in Vrindavan, what we used to do in the temple was we would not eat anything till in the period at least 9 hours before the lunar eclipse. For solar it's 12 hours, but for lunar it's 9. Say 8, stretch it to 7 if you like. Which means you have your lunch around 1 o'clock, let's say 12:30, and then maybe you don't eat anything after that if you can for the day. And then once the eclipse is over, then take a bath, change your clothes, wash the clothes, and then eat.
Or if it's too late, then just go to bed. But whatever you do or you don't do, to whatever degree you follow or don't follow all these things, chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol.